Hello, and welcome to the Movie Robcast. I'm your host, Rob Wallace, and as always, I'm truly delighted to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Daniel.
And as always, it is a joy to be here with you talking about films, but, well, this is a pre-film chat. What are we seeing today?
Today, we are seeing Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and for this intro sequence, it's cool. We're actually back in Crime Alley, where we recently recorded the Flash Pod. I was going to make the joke more like Time Alley in this case, but that would also have applied to the Flash Pod, so...
It still works.
So yeah, we're seeing the new Indiana Jones, the new and, we're led to believe, probably final Indiana Jones film.
Well, never say never. When I saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in 2008, I thought... Well, it's probably best they're not going to make any more of these. But they have. And 15 years later, it just seems... I mean, cards on the table. Found out today this film is 2 hours and 34 minutes long. That is longer than the longest Indiana Jones film to date that I've seen, which was The Last Crusade, which was 2 hours and 7. Even The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was 2 hours 2. Raiders of the Lost Ark is 1 hour and 55 minutes, and you can't improve upon Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like, I have to admit, I'm kind of annoyed with this film before I've even seen it, because that is a baggy runtime, and I hope against hope that I improve wrong and that it earns the runtime. But if you can tell the story of Raiders of the Lost Ark in 1 hour and 55 minutes, where God makes a cameo, what are you going to bring to this one?
Yeah, I think with this franchise, if this ends up being the fourth best film in the franchise, I'll be satisfied.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because there is, I always say there's about half hour of really good stuff in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Half hour of, oh, that was okay, and an hour of, this really isn't very good, is it? So yeah, we'll see, but I mean, again, I say it so many times, but it's, if you can't tell your Indiana Jones film in 2 hours after four that have been told in 2 hours, I think you're a bit shit at your job, James Mangold and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I take it, did she have a hand in writing this one?
I don't know, actually. I think she did. I mean, it's the problem with legacy calls is that everything has to be longer because they kind of almost feel like they've got to deal with the meta-contextual baggage or the thematic baggage of the film. And they, like, everything just ends up being longer because it's like, oh, we're making a Jones movie and this isn't allowed to be... The original ones were never disposable, but they were allowed to just be a blockbuster. Mm. We're going to hear them make the best blockbuster that happens to have the character of Indiana Jones in it. But now it's like, oh, we're making an Indiana Jones film. This film, you know, we're making part of history.
Yeah, this is a prestige picture. By their very nature, prestige pictures have to be long.
And it's the same. It's this basically the same issue as with the Bond franchise in recent years. It's not allowed to just be a really good blockbuster. It has to be film of the year.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, yeah, well, you've just given me a bit of hope there, because No Time to Die clocked in at just under 3 hours, and that was very good. The thing is, I saw Extraction 2 at the weekend, and I fucking loved it. It's the film that John Wick 4 could have been if it wasn't so far up its own arse in terms of its runtime again. Extraction 2, 2 hours. The action is enough without being bludgeoning. I just think we have to get back to the two-hour films, because to your point, it's like Raiders Lost Ark wanted to be the best adventure movie it could be, and understood that to be that, you kind of have to be quite quick. You have to be fleet of foot. You do it in 2 hours, right? You're 2 hours an hour. Aye. Anyway,
Actually, I need to check this before I say this. We can edit it later. Is the runtime of this closer to The Irishman than to...
Well, that clocks in at 4 hours,
Does that clock in at 4 hours? Or is that...
I think... No, it's 3.5, I think. I think this is closer to Raiders than it is to The Irishman.
But
only just.
Much.
Only just.
It's like a digital de-aging kind of...
Yeah, true, yep. I mean, let's see. We'll see what time we get out as to whether we do this tonight, at the podcast tonight after the film, or if we do it tomorrow. I just so hope that I am proved wrong on this. I hope, against hope, I prove wrong. As we said, the reviews...
It's got a really good cast. I mean, it's got Phoebe Waller-Bridge as like the supporting... He's... goddaughter, who's going to be British and Saki, and they've got John Rhys-Davies back as Sala, and they've got
Mads Mikkelsen
as a Nazi, and they've got Boyd Holbrook, who was, you know, he's a really good actor, and it, I think for me was the best thing about Netflix's Sandman, playing the Corinthian, and he's also signed up for Justified: Primeval City. He's the antagonist in that.
Okay. Yeah, so there's some stuff there. There was something else I was going to say.
Toby Jones is in it. I don't know if you've seen the poster of Toby Jones with him, just like, it's just Toby Jones looking very battered on a poster, and it's great because it's so like, here's Toby Jones, and it's like, yeah, we love him, but is this marketable? Is there I would see Toby Jones in most stuff, but I don't think you could. Why are you selling your Indiana Jones film on the presence of Toby Jones, who I'm assuming may or may just be in the flashback sequences?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, I mean, I actually know very little about this film other than what has been in the trailers. And yeah, I mean, I love the Indiana Jones films, the original trilogy. They're just so, so brilliant. And I'm kind of, I hope against hope, I hope that I'm absolutely buzzing when we talk again after this.
There's a train sequence in this, and I guess your most immediate point of comparison, given what you've just said, will be, is it as good as the train sequence in Extraction 2? And then next week, we'll be having the question, is it as good as the train sequence in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my God, there's a lot of trains happening right now, isn't it? And the train sequence in Extraction 2, particularly a fight in the cabin of the train. Oh, my God, it was brilliant. Extraction 2... just watch it, guys. It's so good. Okay, so hold on to your hats. We'll be back soon.
I'm retiring.
Well, in that case, what are we drinking?
Same for the goddaughter.
Dad told me you found something on a train during the war. A dial that could change the course of history.
Why are you chasing the thing that drove your father crazy?
Don't move.
We need to get out of here.
Stop!
Sorry.
Helena!
Dr. Jones.
Hitler made mistakes, and with this, I will correct them all.
You stole it.
Then you stole it.
And then I stole it. It's called capitalism.
This way!
Fasten your seatbelt. There might be some turbulence.
You've taken your chances, made your mistakes, and now a final triumph.
Indiana Jones.
A few times in my life I've seen things.
I've been tortured with voodoo. Been shot 9 times. Including once by your father.
Sorry.
But I've been looking for this all my life.
Well, we have now seen Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. This is not immediately after the film, because the film finished at 25 past 10 by the time we got out of the cinema, so we thought we would pick it up the next day, having slept on it. So, Rob, before we continue with what we thought of the film, shall we just give a quick plot synopsis?
Sure, are we going to... actually, having not been able to do it for The Flash, let's see if IMDb is currently up and running.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Archaeologist Indiana Jones races against time to retrieve a legendary artifact that can change the course of history.
Yep.
Fine.
Cool. We'll just put a little bit more meat on the bones for that one. So this one is set in 1969. So I think 12 years after the events of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And this one sees Indiana Jones at retirement age, or quite past retirement age, if you were to look at Harrison Ford's real age. He gets hooked into an adventure with his goddaughter, Helena Shaw, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She is continuing her father's work. What was his name? Basil Shaw, wasn't it?
played by Toby Jones.
Who was obsessed with this time device that Archimedes apparently made. And she wants to find the two halves of this. She's been hunted by someone else who really wants to get their hands on this as well. And that is Mads Mikkelsen, who is the baddie in this movie. And he plays... What's his name again, Rob?
His name is Dr. Voller.
And he's a bit of a Wernher von Braun analogue. He was a rocket scientist, so he's kind of being fated in the US because this is the year of the moon landing, of course, and he helped with the moon program. But what he really wants is to get his hands on this Archimedes device to, well, to see what he can do with some of the time fissures that apparently Archimedes could recognise to maybe change the course of history. They go on a big adventure and try to find this thing.
Because if there's one thing that we've learnt is that we really want hard sci-fi in our Indiana Jones franchises. In our Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah, dude. Because there's a big thing in this about it not being magic, about it being mathematics. And this is all kind of backed up by science, apparently. Which is the first time that that's been a thing in Indiana Jones, I think. I mean, we had sci-fi with aliens in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But this is the first one where they're saying, no, this is actually theoretically real and possible. So we're now getting into quantum mechanics in a Indiana Jones film. So helping them on this particular quest are people like Antonio Banderas, who is a newcomer to the franchise. We're not going to spoil who he plays, but he has a nice small role. John Rhys Davies as Salah is back from Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade. And Ethan Isidore is Teddy, who is Helena's little sidekick, kind of a short round type. And there are other people in it as well, but they are the major characters. Yeah, so I suppose we should say what we thought of the film, because we talked about how excited we were, but how trepidatious we were. Do you want to go first, Rob, or do you want me to go first?
I don't mind going first. I was genuinely excited. You know, the release of an Indiana Jones film, cynical, you know, whether or not we're cynical about it, is a major event.
Yep.
It's very dull. I mean... I know we'll expand on this shortly, but it made me nostalgic for Crystal Skull.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you said before we went in, could this be the fourth best Indiana Jones film? When we left, you said, well, that's the worst Indiana Jones film, right? And yeah, I would say this is not only the worst Indiana Jones film, this is a worst film of the year contender. This film is shit. As far as I'm concerned, I can't be any more blunt than that. The runtime that we were talking about in the pre-film or in the pre-watch section is a massive, massive flaw. This is a boring, dull, tedious movie. Nothing happens. It actually reminded me of a Tomb Raider film, of one of the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider films, where they go on a quest, but there are no stakes, really. There's no emotional involvement in anything. You're just watching them go from A to B to C, and then the baddies will catch up with them for a little bit.
I quite like the first Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider film. I think actually mainly because that was one of the first DVDs I ever watched the behind-the-scenes featurettes on, and the sequences with the statues, like the statues coming to life. They had some amazing stuff on the DVD about how they use particle effects.
And I think it says a lot that you're talking with real enthusiasm about the Tomb Raider film, which is, what, 23 years old or something? And you couldn't muster any enthusiasm for your response to this film that you watched yesterday. That says it all. It's like, this is utter mediocrity. This film is hollow. And it absolutely blows my mind that this was the script that got Harrison Ford to return to the character 15 years later for what he must know and has apparently confirmed will be his last appearance as Indiana Jones. And it's like, this was the story you wanted to tell? This nothing story? Why? Why did you want to tell this story?
Because that's the thing. There are innate themes, and they tend to be present in a lot of kind of legacy sequels. The idea of growing old and whether or not you're still relevant. The film does nothing with them. The central MacGuffin has to do with time travel, but it's like it's so caught up in the plot that the film forgets that maybe they should do something with that.
Absolutely. It's also one of the things that in every single Indiana Jones film today, including The Crystal Skull, you realise what it is and what the power is. This is just one of those things that's like, well, we kind of know what it can do, but the film is very reluctant to tell us what it can do, what the central MacGuffin can do. And you think, well, are you holding back for some major, major legacy sequel stuff then? Are we going to be revisiting the older movies? Nothing like that.
I did wonder if they were going to do a Back to the Future part two.
Yeah, no, they don't. I mean, anyone thinking that, you just stop thinking it right now. They don't do anything like that. But they don't do anything with the MacGuffin either. There's nothing like the Ark of the Covenant, which is just a thing for most of the film. Then at the end of Raiders, you realise, oh my god, that is actually the most powerful thing in the world right now. There's nothing like that in this film. And to your point about it being a legacy sequel, this just stops the film to say, I'm getting old, or it stops the film to say, oh, he's having a quick retirement party, but there's no real exploration of any of that. It just stops to kind of say, yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? But let's continue with this very, very boring story now. And it doesn't really observe any of the rules of a legacy sequel in terms of there's no meta commentary other than the fact that we see Harrison Ford's quite buff for a late 70s year old when he was making this movie. He's quite buff without his shirt on.
Yeah, he's in amazing shape.
Like, apparently he was doing 40-mile bike rides and stuff to get into shape for this role. But that's it, basically. It's like, well, the point of a legacy sequel is that you comment on everything that you've created in a franchise and you bring back some characters that we haven't seen for a while, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why we love these films, even if sometimes it can just come across as fan service. This was quite a salutary example of, all right, I actually want the fan service, it turns out, because when you don't have any fan service in a legacy sequel, you just get a pointless story with characters brought in who are analogues for characters in the previous Indiana Jones films, but really, it's like, well, why aren't we seeing those original characters? Why are we seeing these weak Xeroxes of those cherished characters? Oh my god, I guess the more I think about it, the more I think, was this just a Disney cash grab that the accountant said, yeah, we can probably make some more money from an Indiana Jones film, so let's do that, but we don't give two shits what it looks like, and we aren't going to spend a lot of money on the script, although this film has four screenwriters, including James Mangold, including David Koepp, who wrote Jurassic Park, and the Butterworth, I think they're brothers, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Jez Butterworth is probably one of the best playwrights of the 21st century.
Oh, he did Jerusalem, didn't he? Was that the Matt Rylance one that you saw?
Yeah, he did Jerusalem. Like, he did The Ferryman. Like, you know, he's one of those writers that every time he's got a play that goes up on the stage, a bit like Martin McDonagh, I will go and see it.
Mm.
But his filmography is very hit and miss. I mean, the first film that probably people will recognise on his filmography is Edge of Tomorrow, which, again, I quite like.
Yes, yeah, good film.
He did Get On Up, Chadwick Boseman as James Brown. He did Black Mass, which, again, like, I think I know I like that more than you did.
It was solid.
Yeah. Spectre.
Yes, he did Spectre.
But again, Spectre, Ford v Ferrari, which he did with James Mangold, Cruella, which we both liked. He was apparently uncredited on that one. And then he did Flag Day, which is the film that came out with Sean Penn. Actually, that's I was unfairly critical of his filmography. But essentially, the more screenwriters he's working with, the worse the film's going to be.
Seems that way. I mean, his brother, John Henry Butterworth, also did Edge of Tomorrow. He also did Ford versus Ferrari. He did Flag Day as well. Hasn't got as many credits. But then you look at David Koepp, and David Koepp did Spider-Man and Mission Impossible, the original one. So, I mean, these guys have blockbuster form, and James Mangold was another writer. James Mangold, I mean, he did The Wolverine, he did Logan, he did Ford versus Ferrari. He's done stuff like Girl Interrupted, so he knows how to bring emotion to a story as well. I just don't know why this was so hollow.
Very quickly, randomly going back to Martin McDonagh, it's interesting that Jez Butterworth, one of the premier playwrights of our time, has a brother who's also a playwright called John Henry Butterworth, and Martin McDonagh has a brother called John Michael McDonagh, who's also a film writer, a filmmaker.
Yeah. Yes, and Boyd Holbrook is in this as Mads Mikkelsen's lieutenant, isn't he? And I know you're a fan of Boyd Holbrook, and you were also slightly disappointed at that, at how underused he is, basically. Like they all are. There's no character to any of these characters.
He's also the henchman in Logan. And they're just given nothing to do. I think the film, fundamentally, okay, what's Okay, let me this isn't meant to be a criticism of Raiders, but what's Belloc's motivation in Raiders?
Yeah, he obviously wants the prize, which is the Ark.
Which is a very simple motivation. In the same way that, again, Temple of Doom has a simple villain motivation. This film...
Sorry, just to finish your thought there, A Last Crusade also has a very simple motivation, very nice motivation. Find the Holy Grail, but really, it's the father and son story. That was a great way to use the Indiana Jones template in a really emotional way. But sorry, go on.
Yeah, and that's in this case, it's like, okay, the villain has probably got more quote-unquote depth, the Voller character, than the villains in the other films, but it's not engaging because the MacGuffin doesn't really resonate with anything, even though it's arguably the perfect MacGuffin for a Legacy sequel.
It really is. It really is the perfect MacGuffin, particularly, and we'll get into this in spoilers, when there is a massive event that is just told. It's not dramatised. The film just stops and they say at one point what's happened. Then you're thinking, okay, right, so you've got a time device. Okay, right, well, let's see where this goes. But, and also, the thing that I was thinking is that during the 80s, things were being done for real, or they were being done with miniatures and map paintings and stuff. But there was a lot of practical stunt work. To achieve these things, you would have sets and practical stunts and things like that. Oh, sorry, if anyone can hear some banging in the background, that is someone at the front door. I have actually moved into a house. Very nice. The thing with this is that all the action was CGI. Some of the action was quite imaginative, but there was none of that real thrill that you get in watching Indiana Jones movies, 30 and 40 year old movies, where you are watching the stunts being done for real. And as we said, the Harrison Ford de-aging is still a little bit weird. It's probably the best that we've seen de-aging up to this point, but it's still a bit weird.
With the flashback sequences, I feel like they've taken his character's eyes, the young Harrison Ford, they are so glinty. It's like there's almost like a perpetual cat's eye effect, because they clearly took on the advice, you know, when people talk about the Uncanny Valley, when they go, oh, it's dead eyes. It's like, well, if we make the eyes shine like torches, they won't be dead. It's like, no, but it's still weird. Like, it doesn't work.
No, because now he looks like one of the interdimensional beings from the end of the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull with his bright eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now he looks like a fucking one of the cat people. It's like, it just doesn't...
I thought that. I thought the eyes were, like, odd. I couldn't quite work out why, but you've nailed it. It's like, yeah, there is too much light and life going on in them. They do not look real. The skin texture sometimes doesn't look real. There's a really, really great moment, and I think some of it's in the trailer, but there's a big opening set piece. The film opens at the end of World War II. It's a big set piece on a train. There's a moment when he runs up into the foreground of the shot. It's in a big close-up. That's a shot, I think, that happens in every single Indiana Jones film. It's the same sort of shot when he's chasing after Marion in Raiders of the Lost Ark and then runs into the foreground of the frame, and then you see that he can see a market that's got all the baskets and doesn't know which basket she's in.
Yeah.
And there's that shot is in this film, and on that it was really, really good de-aging. I love that shot, and you've got it in this film. And actually the opening of this film was like, okay, this is okay. I'm getting some alarm bells ringing in terms of just how many MacGuffins are kind of tripping over each other, and it seems a bit clunky in its setup. But the opening 20-odd minutes of this film are quite lively. It then just hits a brick wall afterwards because it has no stakes. I thought, I don't care what happens to anyone in this movie. There's no sense of dread or peril. There is no emotion to any of this. Even after a big emotional revelation, it's like, yeah, I don't care. That just seems really, really cynical. So... fuck off.
Well, they introduce the Helena character, who's the witty, acerbic goddaughter, you know, who's essentially, you know, the replacement for Mutt Williams.
Well, she is, but she's like a cross between Marion and Mutt.
Yeah.
She seems to inhabit both those characters. But yeah, sorry, go on, I interrupted.
She's kind of like droll and infuriating, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge tries very hard to kind of imbue the dialogue, the lackluster dialogue, with a spark of wit. No, then failing to take the understanding, it's like, yeah, like, nobody's a... That's a rule. I don't think anybody was a massive fan of Mutt. But the people who didn't like him, like, you've just introduced an entirely new character to essentially be a secondary lead in the film. People don't really want that. Like, unless it's Sean Connery, and you're using it to explore some dynamic of the indie character we haven't seen before, why have you done this?
Yeah, and actually, to throw a quick shout out to Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Yeah, she had nothing to do with the writing of this film, so sorry for accusing you of that. But you are known for your writing. She is one of the better things in this film. She has nothing to work with, as you said, but she gives a really, really zesty performance, and she's really good fun when she's on screen, and she throws herself into the derring do. This may turn off a lot of our viewers, a lot of our listeners, but I just didn't care for Killing Eve. I thought Fleabag was overrated. But this, I thought, well, you're kind of rescuing this movie for me in that you are making it just about watchable once on a big screen, although I am still incredibly bored. But she earned her paycheck. She's giving it her all. I mean, Harrison Ford just looks a bit bored in this, doesn't he? It seems as if it was like an obligation, but it's like, well, you were the one that were really, really pushing for this. Just so odd. What do you think of Harrison Ford in this?
He gets a couple of moments where I thought you're still, you know, connected to the character, largely in the final act, where we'll talk about that later. I've actually written a review of this up. That's actually currently live on my site.
Oh, brilliant. Send through the link and we'll pop it into the show notes.
For me, the movie's a bit like, you know, when Indy's retiring and he gets given that guilt clock.
Mm.
The film is a guilt clock. It's just shiny and cheap and a bit hollow. And it's got generic action, gaping plot holes that I think we'll talk about in the spoiler section, and just unexplored themes. It's like there's nothing to this.
Yeah.
If I give this a hard shake, it will just fall to pieces.
Well, actually, to stick with your guilt clock analogy, it's shiny, hollow, and a constant reminder that your best days are behind you.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Okay, that's going in the review.
You can have that one. Thomas Kretschmann's in this. He's wasted. He's got a cameo as a Nazi. And it's like, yep, fine. None of the action is exciting. Some parts of it are mildly diverting. Kind of, oh, that was quite funny. I laughed a couple of times, but overall, I was so bored. I was Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End bored in this.
Oh, wow.
There's a scene when they go diving and it's like, oh, God, they're going to go even slower now. I know that Indiana Jones is old, but does the film have to be as arthritic as he is? It's like...
So you weren't affected by the eels where they go, they look like snakes.
That is actually another thing. Okay, there are two things with Indiana Jones and his fear of snakes, because I also have ophidiophobia, which is a deep fear of snakes.
Which I think you've literally only developed in response to Indiana Jones. I think you're just like, I can't crack a whip. I can't, you know, I can't be afraid of snakes.
I have to be like Indy. I can't match him in his rugged handsomeness or in his ability, but I can match him in his weakness. The opening of Raiders, when he gets away from the tribes people and is in that plane with Jock, I think it is, the pilot, and then looks down and the pet snake Reggie is in the seat with him. That is proof that Indiana Jones is not that phobic of snakes, because anyone who is phobic of snakes wouldn't stay on that plane. They would get onto the wing. They would just get as far away as they could from that snake. It's like, you don't sit with a snake. Anyway, the other thing is that eels do not look like snakes. Yes, they are long and they don't have any legs and stuff, but they look more like fish. So when they say eels are down there, they look like snakes.
Sorry, I just love that. They're long and they don't have any legs. I believe that's a scientific categorization of a snake.
Which is just a lazy writing on behalf of the screenwriters. It's like, no, it doesn't work like that. They have gills. They have other things to them that make them very different to snakes. They don't elicit the same phobic response. They are just different. I can look at an eel and I'm absolutely fine. If that same scene was again in the Well of Souls or the snakes, I would be kind of, you know, looking down or looking over my glasses so it'll be out of focus. So again, it was just like, ugh. Once more, you fail me. You fail me, Dial of Destiny.
So Rob, when I say snake, what do you...
Eh?
Sorry, that was my attempt to do like a Sigmund Freud-style therapy session.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes, word association. Snake. And then come out with like, actually, no, because that could get very, very dark and I don't have time to properly land it before we get into spoilers and people think, oh, no, there is actually something terrible from his childhood. They're just evil, Rob. They're just evil, evil things.
The Bible would disagree with you. Oh, wait.
Yeah, indeed. Other religions, though, would say, no, actually, they're just misunderstood. I'm trying to think now of how I can criticise this film in terms of snakes. The ambition on this film was lower than a snake's belly. There you go.
That feels like that's almost literally a Bible quote.
Is it?
Yeah, about like belly in the dust. I feel like you've literally just paraphrased scripture there.
Wow. You see how even when I'm not trying, I can just be so holy and divine. Unlike this film. It is very plot holy.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we lose everyone, any other general kind of kicking you want to give this film before we get into specific spoilery kickings?
No, I want to give it a specific kicking.
Okay, then. Well, shall we quickly do our plugs for those who are leaving us? I mean, I would say, to be completely honest, though, I would say don't go and see this film. If you love Indiana Jones, and I know that if you love Indiana Jones, you'll still go and see it, because I would do the exact same thing I'd say, but I need to know what it looks like. Maybe it's not as bad as you're saying. It is as bad as I'm saying. It is a worse film of the year contender.
It's Indiana Jones and the Trial of Patience.
Indiana Jones and the Arthritic Day Out. You can wait for it to come onto Disney Plus.
Rob, that's literally the last line of my review on my site. Indy deserves better, so do you. Wait for Disney Plus.
Oh, wow, okay, there you go. You see, that's the thing, is that it's like, this was a film made for Disney Plus. This is a film made to just put on one afternoon. You'll find yourself on your phone. It's fine, because you're in your own house. You don't need to spend cinema price money on this movie. You just don't. And it breaks my heart to say that, but it is rubbish. One more thing, though. There was this young lady. She came out of the cinema really, really animated. And I thought, okay, I want to hear, I'm going to eavesdrop, I just want to hear what someone who really liked that film has to say. And she said, Mads Mikkelsen was so cool in that film. He's just so cool. He's just so cool. He's so cool. Oh my God, Mads Mikkelsen. And she clearly was a huge fan of Mads Mikkelsen. Now, we love Mads Mikkelsen, don't we, Rob? We agree with,
yeah, I mean,
with that young lady that he is so cool. But he's got nothing to do in this film. He does elevate the scenes he's in just because he's such a great actor. But he's got nothing to do. And I do hope she wasn't referring to him as being cool in that SS uniform. Even though he was poured into it. That wasn't the cool bit, right? It was when he was wearing that very, very dapper suit and waistcoat. That was the cool bit, wasn't it? Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Looking a bit like Belloc.
Obviously, yeah. Mads Mikkelsen, who, you know, we've done a podcast on Hannibal.
Mm.
He does that, he's got that wonderful elegance. But again, in this, he was playing a Nazi. So
he can do great villain. He can also do incredibly complicated villain. He was also obviously a Bond villain in Casino Royale. And I think there's one other Indiana Jones alumnus who has been both a villain in this franchise and a Bond villain. And that was Julian Glover, who was Walter Donovan in Last Crusade and was also the Bond villain in For Your Eyes Only. But I can't think of his name in that one. If you get Mads Mikkelsen, you give him something to do. Anyway.
Oh, actually, whoa. John Rhys-Davies played not a villain, but certainly an ambiguous character in Bond.
Yes, was he also in For Your Eyes Only?
Living Daylights, he was Pushkin.
Oh, Living Daylights, that's it, yes, indeed, yeah. But he's not a villain in this, though, is he? He's one of the goodies. Okay, right, well, let's get into spoilers. Let's quickly do our plugs first. If you do want to see the film, don't listen. We are going to give away some spoilers. Do wait for Disney+. It is a bad film.
It's a great business model for Disney, isn't it? It's like, drive people towards Disney Plus by making mediocre films that people decide not to see in the cinema.
Absolutely. And they are stacking up for me right now. We've got Quantumania, which I still haven't got around to watching. We've got Guardians of the Galaxy, Little Mermaid. Yeah, I mean, they're just stacking up for me now. Anyway, if people want to find you on the internet, where can they do that?
Yeah, if you want to find me online, you can follow me on Twitter, at Robert M. Wallace. You can also find my writing, such as it is, including my indie review, and Of All the Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, Mr. Daniel and I have previously hosted a podcast devoted to the film Highlander, the 1986 cult classic, which you can listen to wherever you listen to this. It's called Another Time MacLeod. You can also follow that on Twitter at MacLeodTime, or drop us a Highlander-themed email at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Rob_A_Daniel. You can find me on Instagram at RobDan75 and Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/RobDan. You can find my writing, not yet an Indiana Jones film, Dial of Destiny review. You can find that at electric-shadows.com. And if you want to follow the podcast, then that's Twitter at MovieRobcast. Instagram at The Movie Robcast. You can also send us a movie related email at movierobcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and yeah, good luck with the movie if you do decide to go and see it. And we'll talk to you again very, very soon about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. But we're now going to go into spoilers. You'll hear a bit of the trailer, and then we're going to start to talk about spoilers.
Do 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 do.
Who is this man?
I'm her godfather.
Marley related.
Get back.
Again, actually, before we get into spoilers, but you are now in the spoiler zone. Yeah, they had the music. They had all the pieces that looked like an Indiana Jones film. It just didn't feel like an Indiana Jones film. John Williams did the music for this film. He did an original score for this movie. Obviously, James Mangold replaced Steven Spielberg. I was reading something where Spielberg said that he watched the film, he gave it his blessing after seeing it, because they had a big screening for all the execs at Disney, they watched the movie, at the end of the film, Spielberg said, "All right, I thought I was the only one that could make one of these movies." And it's like, you are, Steven. You're the only one that can make a decent to brilliant Indiana Jones film. You are just being very, very diplomatic, and it has to be said, very, very sweet, because I can't believe that Spielberg watched this film and thought, yep, that's good. That's good. That's how I would have done it. Anyway, spoilers. Where do you want to start?
Okay. Let's have a look. Where do we want to start? The fact that it's set, or the film opens on Moon Day, on, you know, 1969, the moon landing, and that Vola is Werner von Braun, you know, kind of, who's emigrated to the US as part, presumably as part of Operation Paperclip, and the CIA are implicated, and the film never returns to any of that.
Just for our listeners out there who don't know, Operation Paperclip is...
Sorry, Operation Paperclip was essentially when the US brought over former Nazi rocket scientists to help in the space program after World War II, including most famously Werner von Braun, who built the V2 rockets.
Yeah, indeed. And you say former Nazis, there's a lot of evidence to suggest pretty unrepentant. But yes, that's right. There's a lot of plot set up here, including Indiana Jones being framed for murder that never gets resolved.
Oh yeah, that was my first thought leaving the film.
And mine was, oh my God, that was a pointless pile of shit. Why did they ever make that? But my second thought, actually, when I was watching the film, I thought, as it was wrapping up, I thought, oh, they're not going to resolve that murder thing, are they? I don't care because I want this to end now, please. But, oh my God, they just left. Why would you leave that in? You could easily cut that out. Or you could just have a line of dialogue playing on the radio or something at the end saying he's been cleared of all the charges. Oh, God. So much plot, so much setup, so little of it actually pays off to anything. All the CIA stuff is halfway through the movie just ends, just stops with some murders. And it's like, oh, okay. For me, it was like, okay, right, so you have an Indiana Jones film, clearly going to be the last film. We live in the world of Lego sequels, where you get the people back and you show what's been happening to them over the years. I mean, this can be done in really, really nice ways. I mean, it can be real fan service sometimes, but you never wanted to get short round into this. They must be kicking themselves that Kihei Kwan is not in this film after his Oscar win. It's like they must have been thinking, how did we miss that open goal, that 5-yard tap-in of getting Kihei Kwan into this film? He obviously would have said yes, and he's won an Oscar now.
Instead, we've got not short, not round, not particularly interesting.
Yeah, we've got Teddy. I mean, Ethan Isidore tries, but it's like he's just doing a short round. Why not get the real deal? You could have got Willy back from Temple of Doom. Kate Capshaw, I'm sure, aka Mrs. Steven Spielberg, she would have turned up for a cameo.
They could have got Kihei Kwan back and put Short Round in a fight sequence where he kicks ass.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. That's right, do that. You could have got everyone back. Everyone who's alive, you could have got them back. And yes, it would have been fan service. But you know what? Having seen what isn't fan service, i.e. the way they went with this movie, I want the fan service. Okay, I'm going to put my hands up and say it. I just want to see Short Round on screen now with Indiana Jones, and you're not giving that to me, and that is the weirdest fucking decision I am going to see in a film this year. So the other thing, of course, is that Mutt, the Shia LaBeouf character, has been killed off. It seems he joined the army, went to Vietnam, and was killed. That is just plonked into the middle of a scene, a long way into the movie. And it's like, well, they're the emotional stakes, right? You've got a time device. Your marriage to Marion has completely broken down because you're grief-stricken. You can't be there anymore for her. She's served him separation papers, we see at the beginning. That's the emotional core, right? That you get the family back together. Is Shia LaBeouf going to be in this film? And it's like, No, because nothing is done with the Dial of Destiny in terms of changing time. So you set up this massive thing that's happened that has destroyed this character and don't really pay it off. And then have a scene at the end with Karen Allen, which is kind of nice just in terms of seeing the two of them on screen together, but it is not a patch on any of their scenes in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which was really, really lovely and some of the sweetest moments in any Indiana Jones film. I mean, it's not a great movie, but there's some good stuff in it. The ending to this, I just thought, okay, this is how you're choosing to end the final Indiana Jones film. And you've wasted Karen Allen. I'm not sure if she didn't want to do it, but she should have been on the adventure as well. They should have been working through the trauma through the adventure. Instead, you get Phoebe Waller-Bridge as just a cross between Marion and Mutt. And it's like, again, why are you telling this story?
It is a little bit funny to me that they essentially poochied Mutt.
Yeah, they did poochie Mutt, fittingly, but Mutt has returned to his home planet. And I never thought that Shia LaBeouf was that bad. I mean, I actually think he's a very interesting actor. He's obviously got some issues, but I thought he was fine in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Clearly been set up to be the next big thing, but then decided to want to do his own stuff. Chris Pratt's not in this movie, of course, when he was touted to be Indiana Jones at one point. Harrison Ford has said that the character ends with him. He doesn't want it to be recast, but we'll see what Disney say about that. But sorry, I'm doing lots of talking because I have been watching these films for 40 years and three of them are just three of my favourite movies. Just my favourite movies to watch. One of them is a movie that I probably won't watch again, but I'll watch bits of it when it's on. This one I can't really imagine ever watching again the whole way through. But this franchise and these characters are just so special, and to see them being so ruined was just heartbreaking. But anyway, I'm talking a lot. What are some other spoiler observations that you've got?
Yeah, when you talk about one of the plot holes being that the idea that this dial can go back and change history, and he's got a dead son who was killed tragically in Vietnam, and the film doesn't at any point be like, so is he going to try and go back? And because essentially we had those criticisms of The Flash, where essentially The Flash ends up at the point where you can't change the past, which is like, well, actually, in the universe of The Flash, you definitely can. You know, we weren't entirely convinced with how it was handled. This film doesn't even address it.
No, it doesn't. And it seems so weird because I thought, are we going to go into old Indiana Jones movies and, as you said, do a Back to the Future 2? And I don't think that would have been good either, but it would have been more lively than this. I just don't think I would have been as bored watching it as I was watching this movie. But that thing about them not changing the past so that he can be reunited with his son. So, well then why is it a time device? This could be anything. This is purely a MacGuffin. It doesn't influence the plot in any way other than that ending where they go back to the siege of Syracuse 2,000 years ago to meet Archimedes. And it's like, oh. And also the other thing there is that, how do you say it again? The Akitethra or something, was it? How do you say that again? The thing? The Dial of Destiny?
I'm just going to Google Dial of Destiny and hope that and try and find out what the MacGuffin's actually called.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is it? It's like,
it's also referred to as the Archimedes Dial.
But there's like a Greek name for it, isn't there, in the thing? And I thought, that's actually quite hard to say. One of the great things about all the Indiana Jones films is that the central MacGuffin is easy for kids to remember.
The Antikythera.
The Antikythera is like, okay, let's have a tongue twister as our big MacGuffin. And then that other thing where they have the map to find it. And it's like all these different things that they just keep having to find with these really, I'm sure these names are from Greek history, but it's like, it doesn't matter. It's not far in the imagination. Not like the Ark of the Covenant. Oh, and then you don't do anything with it. The film opens with the Lance of Longinus, which was the spear that was put into Jesus when he was on the cross. Then that turns out to be a fake, so therefore that was a MacGuffin within a MacGuffin. But it's like, well, this film could easily have stuck with the Lance of Longinus and not really changed anything other than that ending, which was like, well, the ending just didn't work either when they go back in time, because it's like, he's never ever said that this would be where he would happily die, but then suddenly this is where he wants to be because this is a really, really special moment in time for him. Well, no, that hasn't been earned.
And the film hasn't done enough to say that he doesn't have a life in the future or in the present to justify. And then also the climax of the film, and this like involves a secondary character or, you know, maybe supporting co-lead punching out the hero.
Yeah.
In an Indiana Jones film.
Yeah. Which did make me chuckle because he was being so stupid at that point that it was like, I don't have time for this. Doof, and punches him out so they can just get him back. I actually quite like the fact that they didn't show having to go back through the portal. It just cut to him in his bed. And it was like, there is an elegance there of storytelling that is to be found nowhere else in this movie. I'm very glad you chose to do it that way, because I can't be asked to watch another mediocre set piece in this film. Yeah, it still does end with the secondary lead knocking Indiana Jones out so the climax can end. And it's like, well, what impact did he have there? I mean, one of the big criticisms, or yeah, one of the fun criticisms of Raiders is that if you took Indiana Jones out of the story, it would have a happy ending because it would kill Hitler and there wouldn't be World War II. I think that's like a fundamental misunderstanding of why that film works. But this, though, is like, yeah, what did Indiana Jones do in any of that film, really, apart from just kind of reinforce what the Helena Shaw character knows and say, yeah, that's right. Oy, oy, oy.
I quite like the scene on the boat where Antonio Banderas has just been killed and she's reeling off the history and trying to light the stick of dynamite. I quite liked that, but again, Indy is essentially passive in that scene.
He is, and to be honest, I wasn't a huge fan of that scene. I just thought, oh, just hurry up and light it so we can get elsewhere. It was so bulk standard in its plotting. So they escape, but the Vola character, the Mads Mikkelsen character, sees them go the other way. So he knows that they're not going to where he thinks it is. They're going to go the other way. So he just follows them. This is so first draft in its plotting. There is no obstacle for the villain. We just know he's going to turn up in the next 5 minutes and then there'll be another chase. It's like, none of this seems thought through. So yeah, this was terrible. We had a good chat before the film, though, didn't we? That was good. It was nice meeting up with you.
Oh, thank you, Ben. And you, yeah. If there was anybody I was ever going to see a bad Indiana Jones film with, it would be you. You know, I'd rather not see a bad Indiana Jones film, but, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, indeed. I'm trying to think if there's anything else other than Short Round, Where Are You? We couldn't even be asked to stave to see if there was a post-credit scene because there probably wasn't. I don't think it's the kind of film that would do that. But if there was and Short Round was in it, that would just be rubbing all the salt in the world into the wound. Mm. It would be like, oh, no, that's not how it works. But I don't think there is a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
They really should have ended it in 1989 and they really shouldn't have continued it after 2008. The only comfort you can take is that this is the last one. At least with Harrison Ford in it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's genuinely weird in this kind of... You don't expect a legacy sequel to really fall below a baseline of 3 stars.
That's a great point. And the reason for that is because you know a legacy sequel will trade on nostalgia, which is a lazy tool. But when it's done well, as in The Flash, and as we've talked about with The Flash has deep problems, but I'd still say The Flash is probably about 3 stars, because some of the stuff in The Flash is really enjoyable. And if you want to hear why, then listen to the previous episode. The Michael Keaton stuff, although it doesn't really serve any point, watching it worked from that fan service nostalgia point of view. You're right, this does not do any of that, and the reason why it doesn't seem to be a conscious decision not to do that, but it has nothing to replace it with. I don't know how much this is reminiscent of the Frank Darabont script for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull or for the fourth Indiana Jones film that was rejected because it was again about Nazis. I wouldn't be surprised if this leans heavily on that, but apparently that was quite a good script. This certainly isn't. But yeah, that is the most baffling thing. Why have you ignored all the surefire wins of how to make a legacy sequel?
And I like James Mangold, and I was hopeful about this. But I think maybe being very cynical, there's a reason that Spielberg didn't do this.
Yeah, because he knew the script wasn't up to snuff and he'd already made an average Indiana Jones film because of the script problems. Or is there another reason, do you think?
Oh, no, I think that's the main reason. Yeah.
Well, we never have to see it again. We will be talking about it at the end of the year, because if this isn't my worst film of the year, it's going to be up there. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what I think is worse than this. Not because it was badly made, it's competently made, but because it is so hollow, so utterly without joy, so uninspiring, so dull, so mediocre, such a trashing of a great character and a wonderful original trilogy what could have been a nice corrective to The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull actually makes that film look a bit like the earlier films. It's like, oh, well, it can get worse than The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Wow, okay, I didn't think that was possible. I just hated it. I hated this film. But I'll leave the final word to you.
Goodbye, Indy.
Let us not meet again, except in the past.
Yeah, it's weird when you... it's a good way. Yeah, when you reach a point where you're like, I'm happy not to have more of that.
Absolutely. Okay, then. Well, thank you very much for this therapy session. I think I'll have to bill you for this, because it's like I just had to get that off my chest. It was just such a... oh, so terrible. Well, next Tuesday, we'll be going along to Dead Reckoning.
Yes.
It has to be better than this, right?
It's got Henry Zerny in it, so by default, it's going to be better.
Right, okay.
It's got Kittredge back from the first one, so by default, it's just immediately going to be better.
It's so great that you're so excited by that. It is cool that he was in the first one and now he's back 27 years later.
Yes, yeah. Ethan, you seem very upset. Kittredge, you've never seen me very upset.
Ethan, you seem very upset. Have you just watched the most recent Indiana Jones film? Yes, I have.
Indiana Jones film.
Yes, I have.
I'm sorry.
On that note, thank you very much for listening. If you liked the film more than we did, then drop us a line. It would be really interesting to see what people think. But we'll talk to you again very, very soon about, hopefully, a much better summer blockbuster.
Nail it.